Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerd culture way too much. Joining me, as always, is Griffin. It's been a few weeks since we've done one of these. How have you been?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. I was actually just sitting down to do this. It feels longer than a couple weeks. Dare I say, yeah. It feels like maybe a month. but no, it's good to be back here talking about stuff, but...
But if you think about it, because we took a week to do the Sam review, we took a week off from the live show. And so then this week is also delayed a few days. And so it's at the back end of the week. We took last week off because everything going on in the world. And then the week before that was pre-recorded. And so it's been almost a month since we've done one of these. I didn't even realize that until we sat down to do it. I was like, man, it feels like forever since we've done this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it has. I think
it actually has been. Yeah, you did. You had a beard. You had the crazy hair. And now I'm the guy with the weird mustache and the crazy hair. You just can't see because I'm wearing headphones. But I had something I wanted to ask you right before we started, and then I forgot it. It'll come to me. And you know, I'll interrupt you during like a story or something and be like, so this is exactly what I wanted to talk about. Not Evil Dead 4, not Sony's PS5 release. No. I wanted to talk about this.
So if any of you guys saw my scheduled plan for the week, as well as by pre-announcement of this, Kristen Maldonado was originally going to join us. She had to back out this morning just a couple hours ago. So we'll just be the two of us. So I guess we'll get to do lots of catch up. But she'll be on the show as soon as we can get her back, maybe next week, maybe a couple weeks. But absolutely plan on having her on. It just didn't work out this particular day. But yeah, we had a bunch of interesting kind of stuff drop over the last few days, because the big PlayStation 5 reveal was yesterday, in which case inside of that, we got some information about a new Spider-Man. Looks like expansion DLC stuff.
Earlier this
week, we heard about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse 2 updates on it. Viggo and Peter Farrelly are re-teaming after Green Book for another film. Kenneth Branagh discusses wanting to do an animated Shakespearean film. We've got discussion of an Evil Dead 4 director. HBO Max has been out now. Like, we haven't even talked about HBO Max since it's came out because of the timing on all of this. And then a little bit on James Bond leak. So we got a bunch of different stuff we want to talk about today. But if you're listening to the audio version of this, be sure to leave a review, a score. I can't say that we're in the launch phase anymore, because now we're at almost 20 episodes, over 3 months into this deal, but it still does help out the channel ranking better to get more people to get eyes. I guess not eyes, because you don't watch this if you're on the audio version of this, because you're quite literally on the audio version where you hear it. But as we go through this, we'll do the main section of this. And if you're on the live stream right now, because we are recording this live, we'll take some Q&A at the end of it if you want to send in some questions. And with that said, let's just go ahead and get started talking about the big PlayStation 5 reveal. They had a whole presentation yesterday where they teased all of the launch titles, a bunch of new exclusive games, a bunch of older games kind of coming back. The big thing that people were talking about is that they announced Spider-Man, Miles Morales. So we'll get to that in the actual further revelations on the Spider-Man game. Did you have any big takeaways about the PlayStation 5? Is this the sort of thing that like you get into the specs and all of that?
I don't really get into all the specs and all the like tech stuff. I usually kind of just defer to one of my good friends who's more of a gamer and more tech savvy than myself as it pertains to that stuff. So I'll probably just wait and chat with him to really dive into it. I didn't even watch the presentation. I just kind of like saw the updates as it came through, and I saw the games that are coming out. So we got like Spider-Man, Miles Morales, the expansion. We got like Ratchet and Clank, which I am super excited for, because that's like that's been one of my favorite video game franchises ever since I was a kid. So like getting to see a new one with a new gen like system and whatnot will be really exciting. But I guess the big takeaway is that the console itself is just like it's a really weird design. Like I've seen people like going around comparing it to an internet router. And it kind of makes sense. Listen, I don't care. It can be the ugliest piece of plastic on the planet, as long as it works well. It works as a 4K Blu-ray player. It works as like this amazing system and whatnot. Then I'm all in. I don't know. I'm not necessarily the biggest gaming expert, so.
Yeah, that's kind of for me. I had a bunch of people messaging me, hey, man, what did you think about the PlayStation 5? Hey, man, what did you think about the look of the PlayStation 5? Hey, man, what did you think? And I'm just not a big enough gamer. Like, I just caught up on the Uncharted games. That's like, if you ever want to imagine, besides Spider-Man or Batman, what would be a more like fine-tuned video game for my personal tastes? It's the Uncharted games, and I discovered them during quarantine. And so I'm always really far behind on this stuff. And I've been saying this, I'll say it right here again. I'm thinking PlayStation 5 might be the first system that I buy at launch, simply because of the channel and everything like that. And also, I don't have a 4K player. And so this could be my opportunity to get a 4K player. So I'll buy a TV, find a 4K TV in the next month and get the player for it later this year.
That's the thing. It's like forcing it. It's similar to you. It's forcing me to upgrade to things that I've wanted to do forever.
Right.
And, you know, it also helps that I have a little extra cash right now due to some stimulus checks. So maybe that's where I can, you know, put my money away. Not save it for when I inevitably have to buy a house or whatever. No, I'm going to buy a PS5
choice
with the stimulus money.
And so like, same kind of with you. People are like, what do you think about the specs they gave on it? It was like, well, I don't think anything about them. I barely know what they mean, except they're not as good as this new laptop that I think I bought I did a last live stream. But I don't have strong opinions on the tech side to it. I just know it's going to be faster and more powerful. But I struggle with the fact of, even on the technological side, of playing through, being so far behind on video games, I'm playing through Uncharted 4 and Uncharted Lost Legacy recently. I'm like, what do you do next? Like, what can you get better? Like, this is so good.
Yeah, I know.
I get it.
It's crazy. I agree. I mean, that's the thing that always just kind of like, it always blows my mind how, like, when you reach a point when technology is like incredible already, and then they somehow surpass that, and it already looks like it's going to be better. It's like, how... You know, I don't know, what is it going to look like 15 years from now, you know, 20 years from now,
right?
Like, that's going to be mind blowing. The PS4 was honestly one of the best gaming consoles to have ever come out. And I know everyone kind of says that as we say goodbye to the last gen system, but like, the PS4 had some of the best exclusive games on the marketplace, between like God of War, Spider-Man, The Last of Us, we got The Last of Us Part 2 coming out, obviously, in a week or so, so that'll be really exciting. But the PS5 has a lot to live up to, but, like, if this launch is any indication, I think we're in store for something, like, great.
Right. And I'm old enough that I remember when the original Doom came out.
Yeah.
Shareware. You could get the first episode for free on a disc or a couple of discs.
Oh, yeah.
And when it came out, I thought, this is incredible. Like, this looks so real. We've made it. How could anything ever look better than this? And I mean, when he cocks the shotgun, it literally goes like this. It's about 4 frames per second.
And then now. Yeah.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare came out. And I mean, my brain was blown away. As I was like, this is like, we're going into the cinematics. The cinematics and gameplay have the exact same look to them. It's like I'm in a movie. The world is shaking. This is true 3D. This is so immersive. And that was like 13 years ago now. And we're about to get a generation beyond that. That's the stuff that kind of blows my mind as to where the technology is at and what we're able to do. Black Toad said, what happened to Kristen? We said this at the beginning. She had to back out about an hour before we started. She'll be on at some point in time, maybe next week, maybe 2 weeks from now. But absolutely, I want to have her on. She was supposed to be on back in April, and it was going to be live in person. She was going to come to Texas, into Houston, and we had this whole kind of plan that we've been talking about for several months. And then 2020 happened, so we had to cancel that. So we weren't able to do that particular plan. And then today, once again, it's the second time our plans have fallen through. So the thing that we need to talk about in here is specifically Spider-Man Miles Morales. That was the big thing everyone was talking about.
Yeah.
Is that they put out this trailer for a follow-up to Spider-Man PlayStation 4, a great game that was universally loved. I loved it. A fantastic game. It's how I teach my kids about the New York City, is by playing that game. But so they put out this trailer with Miles Morales, and clearly a continuation. So the big discussion yesterday was, is this a sequel? Is it a spinoff? What exactly is this? They clarified this morning sort of, but it's essentially like DLC continuation.
Yeah.
How that plays out of, do you need to buy a new copy of it? Is it going to be like Uncharted Lost Legacy that it's essentially DLC but released separately? It's still kind of unclear, but it's not full-blown a sequel. It's not full-blown a spinoff. It is continuation inside of it. So what a disappointing way to make that announcement. It takes away the fun.
It's disappointing, but I can't say that I'm surprised, only because the first game came out 2 years ago or so, and so to quickly turn around and put out a proper sequel to it like this year almost would have been like insane to me, especially if they wanted to put the same care and attention to detail and emotional storytelling and game mechanics that they did with that first game. You know, this isn't like a Call of Duty franchise. This isn't like, you know, Assassin's Creed or wherever, where they can do that. They, you know, the what Insomniac is doing with the Spider-Man games is on par with like Naughty Dog, Santa Monica, and stuff like that. So the fact that this is a DLC makes sense. They've probably been working on this for, you know, since before the first Spider-Man game launched. And so it's disappointing to kind of sell people on your and a little deceptive to sell your system on a piece of DLC content, but I think if people are already going to get the PS5, then this is a nice little added bonus. And the other thing I'm unclear about is the game, do you have to rebuy the game just to get the DLC on PS5? And is the PS5, is Spider-Man Miles Morales exclusively PS5 DLC content? Or if I just have a PS4 and Spider-Man, can I get it on there as well? And so there's a little, I'm a little unsure, and maybe it's just because I haven't read up enough on it, but it just seems like a little bit of, you know, false advertising right out the gate, which I don't necessarily like, but I think Sony realized that, which is why they clarified their statements.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they did it literally the next day, you know?
Okay, so got a super chat coming. Thank you so much. Roboto Studios said, Insomniac Games themselves confirmed Miles Morales is a standalone game. Hell yeah. So while you were just talking, I did a Google search on Twitter. Someone responded to one of their tweets about it. And the question they asked was, so is it a remaster, being seeing reports that it's a new content for Spider-Man 4 PS4 remaster? Insomniac Games replied, it's a standalone game. So their official Twitter responded to someone asking, is it a standalone game, saying it is a standalone game.
Well, that to me is weird, because then why would Sony clarify statements saying, like, this is like, I'm not just pulling this out of my ass. Like, this came from IGN. This came from legitimate news sources saying that Sony clarified their statement saying that, no, this is going to be like DLC. So I have no idea then what this is. So I guess it is a new game.
I'm guessing it's probably going to be comparable to Lost Legacy.
That's kind of what
I assumed. It's essentially the same game engine. The game mechanics are essentially the same, but we're taking a side character from the main game, putting it in this one. So it's a spinoff, continuation. It's not as big of a game. That's kind of what I was quickly reading. It's weird that they didn't clarify all of this in the presentation. Yeah, it's weird that they didn't say, hey, this is a standalone game. It's not as expansive. And it's even saying like it's only partially whatever they would need to do. It's weird to kind of announce something, kind of not announce it at the same time. I'm glad we're getting it.
No, for sure. Like that's, I mean, I'm excited for the game regardless. But Connor McCaffrey in the chat, he's saying it isn't DLC, it's DLC style content, but it is being sold as a standalone. So that's similar to Lost Legacy.
Right.
I believe there was an Infamous game that did the same. It was like a Festival of Blood or something like that. It wasn't a full game, but it was like standalone, like own thing. So if it's like that, that's fine. So.
All right, moving right along. We don't have too much to say about this, but I guess it was confirmed this week that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse 2 is in pre-production or production, I don't know how you say that, with an animated film, which means that Miles Morales is having quite a good week. There's not really much to say here because we already knew this. They announced the release date. So whether they kind of start production now, kind of start it later, they already said, we're doing this. It's happening. So it's really more of a confirmation that they're back to work, even though we're, you know, sort of in quarantine. But yeah, did you have anything to add on to that one? It's just something to kind of acknowledge from my perspective.
I mean, yeah, really excited about it. Obviously, it got pushed back. I believe it got pushed back. And so, like, that's a little disappointing. But again, give them all the time in the world to make this. I did, small little anecdote. I spoke with Daniel Pemberton, who did the music for the first one early, like way early this year, like before Birds of Prey came out, because he did the score to that film. And he was talking about just like the stuff that Lord and Miller and everyone have in store for this film is just, it's nutty and like it's bold and it's ambitious and stuff like that. And he was, as a fan of the film, he was really excited just like reading about the plot points and stuff that they're going to hit on in that movie, because he was kind of like us. He's like, how do you make a Spider-Verse sequel work and have it live up to the greatness of the original? And he said that they've cracked it. They found a really solid joint. So that gives me hope, and that made me more excited then. And just knowing that they're going back to work on it now, I'm very much excited for it.
Right. And I mean, they kind of have so much trust for me. Incredibility, yeah. Yeah. That until they really have a big fumble that I see, man, Lord and Miller, this whole crew of people have a lot of freedom with me. And that's what's one of the interesting things is Lord and Miller have one of the, in a certain sense, one of the biggest fumbles of the last decade, most interesting fumbles of the last decade. But it's not even held against them because we didn't see it.
Well, it's not. I wouldn't even consider it. I don't even think it was a fumble. And, you know, in
it's, you don't
mind,
even know. Yeah. It, like, right. It's a thing that could potentially, like,
yeah.
To Kathleen Kennedy, it was a fumble bad enough that we have to fire them. But since none of us have seen whatever it was, it still has this kind of a legendary allure to it that makes it so, like, we don't hold it against them at all. It's like, yeah, Kathleen Kennedy, she's the worst.
Yeah, no, it's a weird situation because you know, having seen Solo and just having, you know, not really enjoying that film and finding it incredibly just unremarkable. And I mean, it's nothing to me. It's just a nothing piece of entertainment. Like, I would have been curious to see just what their version was, you know, like right. They clearly were doing something interesting. And I don't know how much of that film was them, how much of it wasn't. I mean, it felt like a Ron Howard movie, yep. So I assume that most of it was Ron Howard. So I
yeah, in the no movie idea. That we saw, I mean, I didn't. There wasn't really any Lord and Miller in there.
I don't think I saw any Lord and Miller in there. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Phoebe Waller-Bridge's character, but even that doesn't feel like Lord and Miller. You know, Lord and Miller is they're witty. They wouldn't put a character like L3 in there and. You know, write her the way they did, unless they were
trying to. She's too on the nose. It was just too straightforward for kind of what they do.
Right. So, yeah, it's weird.
But all that to say, if you look at everything else besides that, and we can't even look at that. They just have a great track record. In which case, whatever they're working on, I'm interested in. They are still continue to be one of these voices that you're just curious, no matter what they're doing. Kind of
right.
In their own sense, kind of like a Christopher Nolan, totally different sense. But same kind of like they have just such a wit and intelligence to what they do that I want to see whatever they're working on.
Yeah. And I think the thing that I like about them is that while I mean, first of all, they only work on when it comes to the Spider-Verse movies, they're only producers. And I think they work on the story. They're not directing or screenwriting it. I believe I could be wrong on that. So, like, if they bring back the same guys who directed the first Spider-Verse, who have the same passion, like I think it was Peter Ramsey, I forget the other two guys' names, but I just remember Peter Ramsey. And if they bring back those guys and they bring back the same passion and basically bring back the same team and have this amazing story and vision together, I think we're going to be in store for another great adventure. And to be honest, these movies excite me more, probably more than the MCU Spider-Man stuff, because it's different. It's fresh. There's a new voice in there. They're not tied to... you know, a cinematic universe or whatnot. They can go crazy. They can do outlandish things that, you know, fans only speculate on the internet about. And like, we're just like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if like Spider-Man did this? And they can do that in animated form.
Yes. And I to me, that's the most comic booky the original one, most comic booky comic book movie of all time, because it's just so weird. And there's so many, like, both they came up with a new visual style for it that feels like a comic book brought to life,
right?
And then of course just how weird it gets, that I just don't know how you could do that live action. People are like, would you like to see a Spider-Verse live action movie?
No.
And I don't think live action gives something more credibility that I need to see that. Like, there's nothing added by making it live action.
You're
able to get away with so much weird stuff, and like Spider-Ham, Spider-Noir, because it's animated.
Well, yeah, animation offers you the outlet to exaggerate, to have style, and to do stuff like this. I mean, that's part of what animation is, and so like it lends itself to being a great comic book movie. But like, just, you know, Spider-Verse is one of the best comic book movies, period. Yep. Not one of the best it's one of the best animated movies, but not one of the best animated comic book movies, not one of the best, you know, whatever. It's just flat out one of the best comic book movies, and it doesn't matter that it's in the medium of animation. And I think, you know, the sooner I think a lot of people accept that, but the sooner more people start to accept that, I think the better off we'll be in the long run.
Yes, indeed. And all right, moving right along, talk on a quick one on this one. Kenneth Branagh, who is currently on the press tour for Artemis Fowl, stated in one of these interviews that he wants to do an animated Shakespeare film, which, if you don't know, he established himself all throughout the 90s as kind of just like this powerhouse of Shakespeare translations. Like, that's where he put himself on the map, of just like doing a string of Shakespeare movies that were all well received, in different from each other, different types. There was tragedies, it was the comedies. So my sister was really into theater back in the day, and therefore I watched Much Ado About Nothing all of the time. And so then the idea that, after kind of, he's done almost every genre over the last 20 years, that he's like, I want to get back to Shakespeare and do one animated. That just immediately has me going, oh, well, that sounds like fun.
Well, again, similar to what we were talking about with Spider-Verse and being able to exaggerate and be theatrical with it, I think an animated Shakespeare film would be really interesting. And especially with Branagh's knack for world building and visuals, that, like, and like him not having done an animated format, you know, being able to try something new, take what he knows and you know, go to a new medium and do something different with a genre and a story that he's overly familiar with, I think sounds like something really interesting. I did watch part of that interview. It was over at Collider, I believe. And he was I believe Frosty asked him, what Shakespeare play would you want to adapt? And he was thinking Summer Night's Dream or something like that, Midsummer Night's Dream. And I was like, and before he even said that, I was like, oh, it's got to be Midsummer Night's Dream, because that's perfect for an animated format. It's got all the colors, it's got all like the lore, the magic, like that would be perfect if he was able to adapt that into an animated format. I think it'd be great. It'd be really cool to see. So I wonder which studio would be willing to front the money for that. I mean, would Disney be interested in something like that? I mean, he has a great working relationship with them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the tricky part of it's one of those ones that theater kids and everything, like, it sounds like a great idea to cinephiles. It sounds like a great idea to Shakespeare fans of him. But then there's that other side to it of, how much money can it make? What's the budget do you set for something like that to be able to do it right? And that's what I don't know. And so that's the tricky part in it. But Midsummer Night's Dream is one of the ones that my sister acted in. So then would be very excited to learn about all of that. So we will find out what man, if that plays out, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it'd be great. Yeah.
Exist. Much along the same lines as Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is a thing that's like, this is incredible that this exists. What's the version of that for Shakespeare and cinema? Kenneth Branagh, animated Shakespeare movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds very, very cool.
But before we move away from Sir Branagh here, I know there have been people in the chat asking about Artemis Fowl. And then someone even said, how did Kenneth Branagh go from a 100% movie on Rotten Tomatoes to a 13% movie on Rotten Tomatoes? And that's a great question.
So that's what I'll be watching once we finish this. I'll be going to check this one out just to see how good this one is. But see, it's interesting to know what went wrong, because Kenneth Branagh, if you look at the movies he's directed, like he kind of has this very big up and down of like a lot of great, fantastic, solid films. And then he's got these weird ones in there that.
I think he I'm definitely in the minority on this one, but I think he made the best Thor film. And I would have been curious to see what he would have done with two more Thor movies kind of in a similar Shakespearean vibe, because those characters are very, you know, they're rooted in classic mythology, but obviously updated in like a modern comic book thing. So I would have been curious to see what he would have done with that going forward. But, I don't know. I mean, as someone who's seen Artemis Fowl, I think it's a bad movie. I don't think it's the abysmal trash some people are claiming it to be. Like, I guarantee you most of you have seen worse movies in your lifetime.
Right.
And it's at least visually and from a world-building perspective, it's good. Like, there's no denying, like, Branagh has, like, a natural, instinct for that sort of thing. But it's incomprehensible, which is the real problem with it.
I'll figure out if I can comprehend it in about 90 minutes. I'll be checking that one out. All right, I'm going to move on to a subject. So over the last couple of weeks, a ton of people have asked me one question on repeat in my direct messages and on Twitter, and it's, what did I think about Space Force? So we don't know what Space Force is. Essentially, the creator of the American version of The Office and the star of the American version of The Office, Steve Carell, teamed up to do a show based off of the Trump-announced Space Force. And it debuted on Netflix a couple of weeks back. I did actually check it out. I binged the whole thing the day that it debuted with my wife. And I did not like it at all. And so people have been asking, hey, what did you think about it? I didn't like it at all. And why didn't you review it? Because I didn't like it at all. And I don't want to put out a review edited just to kind of trash something. But people keep asking me, so I feel like I do need to cover it. And so wanted to kind of give my quick thoughts on it in general. That they took something that's a concept that just feels like in it, just material ripe to crack jokes about. The idea of a space force is inherently kind of funny. And when you combine that with, what if you got the creative team for The Office to tackle Trump's Space Force? That's inherently a really amusing concept, funny idea. And then they got a fantastic cast, of course, with Steve Carell, John Malkovich, and everyone else. Just a ton of fun people on this show. And I had a funny vibe right from the get-go that I didn't think it was going to work. It sounds great in a pitch, like Office does Space Force, amazing. And then as soon as we went past that, I went, I just have a feeling that this is not going to work for me. It's going to feel too much like they're taking too many easy ways, too many cheap jokes, easy way out. And I watched the first episode. And I was like, okay, this is kind of weird. Like, I don't know where they're going with this. But yeah, they're going for a lot of cheap jokes. And then as the season went along, I felt like I liked each episode less and less and less. And it lost its focus and it got so scrambled. So one of the big problems I had with it was continually, it just made observations rather than jokes. So they would do things kind of like, let's find out what the president is up to. Let's check Twitter. And that would be the whole joke. There'd be no punchline. It would be a setup, which is, Trump uses Twitter, which there's plenty of jokes to be made about that. But there are also jokes that late night television has been making for 4 years straight now. And so they feel so dated. And the whole thing kind of had that vibe to me of, they would set up a joke, but not make, like, they wouldn't actually do anything beyond a simple observation about how ridiculous, silly, strange everything is involving this whole Space Force thing. And then they also had a bunch of plot lines that just made no sense. Like, they established that his wife is in prison, and it prologue to the show, she's there with them, and then she's in prison, and we're never really elaborating where that's going. They dedicate a whole episode to them having an open marriage, and you're like, what is this? What are we doing right now? And every time that the daughter character feels like she's in a different show, tonally, it's like a teenage dramedy whenever she's there. And then we go to Space Force and it's a wacky screwball comedy with chimps in space killing the dog in space and stuff like that. And so I just like it totally, it didn't know what it wanted to be. Directionally, it didn't know what it wanted to be. And a lot of the jokes for me just simply absolutely did not land because they weren't jokes. They were setups. And like, as soon as we finished it, we went back and started rewatching Parks and Rec. And immediately it was like, this is wit. This is like, there's a setup and there's a clever twist on the idea. And I felt like a whole season of Space Force, and there was never a clever twist on any of this. And that's, to me, just felt like a really lazy way to tackle something. And that's why I always had that vibe of like, this feels too easy for them. And they're going to lean into all of the cheap jokes, the obvious stuff that late night television has already been doing for years. And so I got to the end of it and I went, man, that was one of the most disappointing things I can imagine. We kept watching it, waiting for it to get funny, waiting for it to get good. And it never did. It just kept at the same level of like, what are they doing? Why are they heading in these directions? Why are they going? And so I tweeted this out as soon as that night. I was like, wow, that was the worst binge show that I've ever finished. Because there's plenty of things I've started and didn't finish. This one, we just happened to binge the whole thing and finished it. Both my wife and I were like, that was not good. We did not like it at all. And then on Twitter, a bunch of people loved it. And then really? I talked to a bunch of my friends, Al Seward, talked to him on the phone a couple weeks ago, and he really dug it. I talked to several other people. They really dug it. And so it seems like one of these shows that it just polarized people. Like a bunch of me and a bunch of others were like, I didn't get that at all. I just think that they took the lazy way out and it did not work. So disappointed. A bunch of other people like, I thought it was hilarious. So that's my take on it. Griffin, what have you heard from people in general? Because you haven't watched it.
Yeah, no, I haven't watched it. I think the friend or roommate or someone had it on the TV at some point in time. And I watched like, you know, not really, just like kind of tangentially watched like, I don't know, maybe like 15 minutes of it. And I was like, oh, no, this is not good. This is very bad. It's very just... They went for low-hanging fruit. They didn't try very hard. They just – none of it was funny. It thought it was way funnier than it was. And I guess I was just kind of shocked coming from Greg Daniels and Steve Carell. Like, Steve Carell is a creator of this show. It's not even like they just got him to star in it. Like, he collaborated with Greg Daniels to make it. And, like, we know Steve Carell is more talented than that. We know Greg Daniels is more talented than that. The whole premise, like, I don't know. I guess maybe there's a way to do it and to do it witty. But to me, it's too obvious of a joke to be funny in the long run. Like, yes, the fact that there is a space force in our country, in the actual branch of a military, is a farce. Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's moronic. But like, I don't know. You can't do that. We all know it's stupid. So like, what's the point of making a 10 episode comedy series about it?
I think that's kind of the problem, is that there's nothing to actually satirize. And so you're left with just like, because we don't know anything about it. It's not like anything's happening because there's nothing to happen. And so then they're just having to like concoct scenarios and try and do satire while doing screwball comedy, while trying to make it grounded and have family elements to it. And so when you put it all together, it just did not mix for me at all. And I wonder even how part of what they're so good at is improv. They're great at getting funny people and having them sit there and just riff. And so you cut to like the in-camera documentary aspects of Parks and Rec or The Office, and you have these funny people just say 10 takes of hilarious things, and then they pick the funniest one and they rewrite it totally in the editing process. And if you have the DVDs of The Office seasons, they have 10, 12, 15 minutes of deleted scenes for every single episode. And they're all just as funny as what you see in the episode itself.
Yeah.
And then with Space Force, it's so scripted.
Overly scripted. There is nothing natural about it. There's nothing like it. Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, sorry.
I think they lost some of it, is what they're really actually good at is that side to it, the organic comedy. And that's even Steve Carell with his background. He was on The Daily Show for years. And then That's the, what's not present here.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that's kind of a the problem with all. Like, I just think they took something that was too obvious, that it seems really funny as a concept until you try to map it out. What do you satirize? It's not really doing anything. We don't know anything about it. And so then it just turns into kind of a lazy series. There's even a Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez character in it. Very clearly, it's her.
I heard about that.
And yeah. So then, but there's not like a, they don't want to actually offend her. They don't actually want to alienate her or go after her. So the joke is that she speaks with her cadence in her voice. That's how you know it's her. But other than that, she's actually saying kind of more reasonable things than the actual Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The satirized version of her seems a little bit more grounded in reality than the one that we have in real life. And yeah, so they couldn't actually, there's no bite to it. They're not even calling out, they're not even saying the name Trump in it, in which case it's satire without the bite. It's comedy without the wit. And then it's people that are great at improvised comedy doing scripted comedy. And so for me, I just didn't like it. And even if you did, I don't want to take that away from you, but I can't say that it's something that I actually enjoyed myself. So unfortunately, we got a super chat come in. Okie dokie. Danny K Review says, "Who marry kill between Sam Jackson, Leo DiCaprio, and Emma Stone? I will marry Emma Stone. I will kill Leonardo DiCaprio, and Samuel Jackson, I guess, are having a one night stand. How about you, Griffin?"
Wow, that's
it was very easy to decide for me. It was very straightforward for me.
Yeah, maybe I go with you. I don't know. I don't think that. Yeah, sure. I'll say the same thing.
All right. I'm glad we got that covered. That was important stuff that I'm sure people wanted to have covered. But
I think it's the most important topic we've discussed today.
Honestly. Yeah, we could probably spend a long time on that particular subject. All right, moving along on our topics of the day. Unless, did you have any final thoughts on Space Force?
Oh, on Space Force? I don't know. I miss the days of like the what do you call it? The Mel Brooks like clever satire. Like, this could have been a Mel Brooks style. Like a parody, right. Like a Blazing Saddles, like a Spaceballs, whatever. It could have been that quality, or even like the Naked Gun.
I watched your first Naked Gun about a month ago, and it was like it holds up. It's really funny.
Yeah,
It's very good, and it's dry humor.
Yeah, no, I can't remember. Is that the one where they have the guy who plays Bush Senior in it, or is that the second one?
The second one, I believe, is where Bush becomes like a major character in it. I think he's in both of them. I don't remember the timeline exactly on it, but Bush is a major character in the second one.
Right. Well, I just look at those movies and I'm like, well, they did it, and they did it funny. I mean, granted, it's not as on the nose as Space Force, but like, I don't know. I guess to close out, I'll just say Space Force just feels like a gag that would be in a more clever like parody film, not like a series centered around itself, you know?
And as one final little context, the first season of The Office was very different from the rest of the show. They recalibrated after season one. Season one of Parks and Rec is one of the weakest seasons of Parks and Rec, and they recalibrated. So there's always that chance that
there's
it takes them a while to find their footing, but it was a major disappointment for me that, I think, like you said, there's just, for some reason, comedy is lacking a lot of its bite these days. And maybe some of it's just the particular political climate that we're in right now, that people don't know how to do comedy without fear of stepping on other people's toes. I don't know if it's just that reality is so much a farce itself. We're in such a weird time period that it's difficult to satirize it because it's just so kind of an odd time. And how much of it is that just people are just, don't know how to write a good joke right now. But like in Hot Shots Part Due, they have full-blown Saddam Hussein is the villain in it, and they drop, he's like out sunbathing at the end of the movie, and they drop a bomb on him that he catches. I mean, it's like they just went for it, like overt in your face. In the first Naked Gun, I mean, it's the Queen of England is in it, and he's like sexually harassing her on accident because it's a screwball comedy. And you just don't have that right. Like they couldn't even say Trump in Space Force. And I think you lose something when you're just like have to, you're trying to satirize something, but you've got kitty gloves on at the same time. it just does not work. All right, let's move along. Next subject. So Viggo Mortensen in Peter Farrelly, the team behind Best Picture winner, The Green Book from a year and a half ago, re-teaming for another film. Let me see what the name, double check, make sure I got my name on this one. The Greatest Beer Run Ever, A True Story of Friendship Stronger Than War. Now, I'm not familiar with the book that this is based off of. I've heard film Twitter had some very strong opinions about this one. But, I mean, if you just think business-wise, if you think acclaim-wise, it makes sense that these two would team back up. They won Best Picture. They got even more nominations. And this is like the guy that did Dumb and Dumber wins Best Picture, working with this guy over here. It's a no-brainer that the business itself is going to be like, hey, let's put these guys back together to try and recreate the magic that we formed here.
Right.
You know, there's all kinds of like, should it have won Best Picture?
No.
Seems like most people say no, it should not. It was just the way all the people, like, it just happened to win because it felt like in the cracks between split audiences. Should have won. Most people say no. And then there's the scandal over is like, is this a bad movie with a bad message? That feels more like kind of a film Twitter discussion more so than if you're out on the street. Out, people are like, like, oh, it was a great movie that had a solid message to it. And I get the criticisms. I get where people are coming from. You need the counterbalance to this one-sided narrative about it. The flip side, like I said, a lot of people really did enjoy the movie. So it seems obvious that they would reteam. I saw a few tweets that are like, why are they doing this? I don't understand why. You don't? If you don't know why they're doing this, you must be in a really small bubble if you don't get this.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, it makes sense. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, accounts out there of, like, some of the stuff Peter Farrelly did on set for years. Like, I don't even know if this is true anymore. I just remember reading it, but, like, you know, pulling out his genitals or whatever to make a joke or something like that. Like, there was just, like, really weird reports that came out. You know, obviously when Green Book was doing its Oscar campaign, because that's what everyone wants to, you know, smear people who are, you know, potentially front runners and whatnot. And so, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm conflicted because I like some of Peter Farrelly's comedies, like earlier comedy. Like, Dumb and Dumber is probably one of the best comedies ever, just period. Like, it's great.
Right.
Viggo Mortensen is a world-class actor, but if it means that we're going to get something, you know, like Green Book again, I don't know if this really excites me. I don't hate Green Book. I think it's perfectly fine. It's not an Academy Award winning film.
It is a winner.
I mean, it is a winner. Is it worthy of it? I don't think so. Not at all. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it makes sense.
Like a 90s Best Picture nominee. It felt like the sort of movie that was very common to be in, you know, Driving Miss Daisy, Forrest Gump.
That's the
that era of Best Picture winner, which also would explain why it kind of appealed to a large group of the audience that kind of reminded them of days past, where it's like, oh yeah, you know, it's tackling issues, it's kind of funny, it's got drama, it's got all that kind of stuff. It's schmaltzy, but it has that vibe to it, and I think that's why it resonated with a lot of people. I'm fascinated by the fact that it resonated so much with Academy voters.
Wow,
but film Twitter, is it like that's what I always try and figure out, like the. I haven't figured out the difference between these two categories. Like, I can see the difference, but I don't know what it is that they see the world so differently.
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the Academy is largely older, you know, and they're a little out of touch when it comes to, you know, cinema today. I mean, they just, and maybe we should cover this, but they just announced earlier today that they are making, you know, a full 10 slot Best Picture lineup. Like, there will be a permanent 10 slot. It won't be maybe 8 1 year and 7 the next. They've announced that they're going to do 10 now. And so they're And I think it's part of like a diversity initiative. So they're working with some of the people that they have in there now, like Ava DuVernay was appointed to the Board of Governors or something, I think, that like that, who is one of the leading bodies of the Academy, I believe. And so, you know, they are taking small steps, but there is like still so much work that needs to be done in order to get that body of voters, you know, up to date. Otherwise, yeah. Because like we don't want another film like Green Book winning Best Picture. We don't want another instance like that. We don't want, you know.
And it feels like, to kind of what you just said, they're out of touch. They see the criticisms like, oh, Oscar's so white, and then they that's where it wins. It's like, oh yeah, this one feels like a Best Picture to us, and it feels like throwing a bone, but it doesn't. None of it feels authentic. It feels like people trying to read the tea leaves, and once again, and some people in the comments, if you're wondering my take on Green Book, I enjoyed the film. I had a solid time watching the film. I wouldn't have had it as my Best Picture. I don't remember what the other nominees were that year, but that's not the one that I would have picked. But I would only I the movie worked for me.
Well, that's the thing. It's like if there, out of all the movies that tackled race and social injustice that year, you had Black Klansman, which was a fucking, or excuse me, I'm sorry. It was an effing, a sledgehammer from Spike Lee. I love that movie. I'm blanking on another. Well, there was Black Panther even, you know, like you had all these movies that were like, they had interesting things to say about the current state of race. And then you have Green Book, which it solves racism by having a car ride and a guy who likes to stuff his face full of food. I mean, Viggo Mortensen eats so much food in that movie.
The Brad Pitt model of acting.
Right, of course. That's true. And it's just like, really? Like, what are we doing here, guys? Like, come on.
So, yeah, but the fact that they're reuniting, it makes sense on a business level. It makes sense on a award level. Man understands why they would want to do that. Clearly, it was good for both of them. You know, I guess we'll see what comes of it. Moving along to our next subject at hand. This week, it was announced who will be working on Evil Dead 4. I guess the title they're saying, Bruce Campbell said, it's going to be Evil Dead Now. Apparently, Ash is not in the movie. And Lee Cronin, who's the writer and director of last year's The Hole in the Ground, has been handpicked by Sam Raimi himself to direct the project. It still feels a little bit unclear. It's like it from the language on the Collider article, who I would trust as a good source on this. It's the fourth Evil Dead film, which that would mean ties back to the original Sam Raimi. Let's continue that, not a continuation of the Fede Alvarez Evil Dead that came out 9-ish years ago. But it says that it's Ashless, which in and of itself is kind of weird to call it Evil Dead. And have you seen this director's work?
I have not. I don't think.
Yeah, I haven't either. So that's interesting to me that it's someone that neither one of us seems. This one isn't even on my radar. But Sam Raimi handpicked him. That's a good sign, I would think. But it's tough to have too much to say about it because it just feels a little. They've been talking about doing this Evil Dead 4 for 25 years, and then we got Ash vs. the Evil Dead, which was seemed like this is the definitive version we're going to get of a continuation of Ash as this TV show. So then we say, no, this is Evil Dead Now. This is the movie. Yeah. But Ash isn't, and it's like, okay, what are we doing? I understand what this is.
Yeah.
So cool, I guess. I need a lot more information in the trailer to get excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, the prospect of a new Evil Dead movie, of course, excites me just because, like, I love that franchise and that film. I mean, honestly, I think Evil Dead 2 might be one of, like, top three favorite horror films of all time. I just absolutely adore that movie. and Army of Darkness is a great way to take a sequel, different but still fun. The remake is amazing. So, like, if it's continuing on that trajectory of, like, you know, they're each film is like kind of different, but like it still feels like an Evil Dead movie, and like it's still a great time. Even though Sam Raimi isn't directing, I think it could be good. I mean, the fact that Sam Raimi hand selected this guy gives me, you know, hope for it. I don't know why Fede Alvarez didn't just come back and do another one, even if it's not a sequel to his original film. So I mean, I don't know, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I really don't have too much to say on this though.
Yeah. So Ziggy asks, what's the best Evil Dead movie? You would say Evil Dead 2?
Yeah, Evil Dead 2.
For I would say Evil Dead 2. I think it's the best mix of both being a horror movie that has nastiness as well as it's in a lot of ways to me peak Sam Raimi of because it's the horror guy and then it is so his Three Stooges influences, his weirdness, his wackiness, all of it combined into one. It's like you can interpret the movie a number of different ways as just a remake, or you could say that the first 10 minutes is a mostly retelling of the first film. That to me, I think, is the one that balances it all the best, to where Army of Darkness is a very interesting, different way to do a sequel. But it lost, I think, some of the charm and some of I think they tried to do a few things they really couldn't do that just don't age all that well with the special effects and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, for that, for sure. I agree with you. It's definitely not as good as Evil Dead 2. It's a weird movie. Army of Darkness is just bizarre, but it's also just kind of an interesting way to take a sequel. I agree with you. Evil Dead 2 just has that perfect blend of like Sam Raimi-isms. There's a lot of them in there, but it doesn't feel like overcooked. Whereas like a movie like Drag Me to Hell, I love the movie, but like he goes overboard in that film, like so much so that I think it becomes a detriment at times. But I still love that movie. It's, you know, these movies all kind of rely on, you know, whether or not you enjoy Sam Raimi's style. It's like, do you get what he's going for? Because it's, if you don't get Sam Raimi, you could sit down and watch this movie and be like, what the hell did I just see? Like, this is stupid.
Well, that's a lot where people go back and watch his first two Spider-Man movies that people grew up watching that understand Sam Raimi's sensibilities and is his humor and the like his influences. And so you grew up on that, so you just grew to love them. If you're born in the year 2002, and so you checked out Spider-Man 2002 and Spider-Man 2 in the year after Spider-Man Homecoming came out, you're like, what, this is goofy, this is corny, why is people doing flips in the air? And you go, oh, because like, that's who Sam Raimi is. And so if you came into the perspective of having watched Army of Darkness for 10 years like I did, and then you see his movies, like it all makes a lot more sense when you get understand him as a person first.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, moving along on here. So since the last time we did one of these podcasts, HBO Max premiered, I guess it was about 2 weeks ago. And the initial buzz from people was really positive in the first week because they had deals with Warner Brothers and Turner Classic Movies and the Criterion Collection. And so there was really nice archive on there that kind of distinguished itself from a whole bunch of the other streaming services. And then week number two happened. Actually, day number two happened, and immediately they started pulling stuff from it. And it was released this week that they're going to pull most all of their DC content starting like July 1st or something like that. And they marketed HBO Max as being the DC platform that has the DCEU movies. And so I don't know exactly what they were thinking in their release schedule with where they have some of these, the way they marketed, the way they promoted all of this, but it seems like a really shaky start to not have a bunch of high profile exclusives that capture people's attention, market it based off of having Wonder Woman, Justice League, especially Justice League.
Yeah,
and then 2 weeks into your launch announcing, oh yeah, actually these are going to be pulled in a few weeks. That seems like a really bad move. And in fact, to make a really specific example, 1 week after it launched, I put out a video, what to watch on HBO Max. One of the movies I said to check out in it was True Lies. The day that I posted the video, 1 week after the service premiered, they pulled True Lies from the service.
I really wanted to. I haven't gotten a chance to watch it on there, and I was so bummed. Cool.
Yeah. Like I used my platform to promote their like service to be like, hey guys, check it out. Here's the cool stuff on there. And literally the day I posted the video, someone messaged me, hey, man, I went to go watch True Lies and it's not on there. And I looked into it. Oh, yep, they did. They pulled it. They pulled it 1 week into the launch. They have really dramatically got to rethink what they're doing with this thing, because they're going to burn so many bridges.
Yeah, yeah.
With their, especially if you don't communicate what you're doing. Like, if what they said was, yeah, all the DCEU movies that aren't currently on there will be on there next month, and all of these movies over here that aren't there, they'll be on there next month, and we'll just cycle through the months. And so you are losing it for a month, but you'll get it back. You could get some trust with people. But when all you hear is, wait, I just signed up to check out these movies and they're already leaving? What? Especially because they don't have strong exclusives that you're confident. Like over there on Netflix, you know that all this original content, 85% of it might be garbage, but then you have the Five Bloods, you have Stranger Things, you have Extraction, you have some premium exclusives with big name stars. What does HBO Max have? They have Love Life, which my wife and I are watching. It's got Anna Kendrick, so therefore we checked it out. But like, it's not like we probably would have signed up for the service just for that one. But that's just because my wife obsesses over like two actresses at a time, and Anna Kendrick has been that actress for about 5 years now. And then Looney Tunes, which like I haven't even checked out Looney Tunes, and I have kids. And so they don't have stuff that hooks people, that draws them in to click. Like, I want to pay $15. I want to play more than I'm paying for Netflix for this service. And the stuff might disappear. Whatever I'm signing up for, it could be gone in 2 weeks. So much so that I used my platform to say, check it out, this awesome James Cameron action movie. Finally, you can see it in 1080 because it's not on Blu-ray. Check it out on HBO. No, just kidding. It's already gone.
It's already gone. Yeah. I don't think it builds goodwill with your customers if right off the bat you're like, listen, we've got the entire DC catalog. And then like a month later, okay, Batman's leaving, like 89 Batman, Wonder Woman's leaving, Aquaman's leaving, like blah, 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 blah. I don't know which DC films, I'm just using those for example.
I think Shazam is staying. Maybe Joker.
Oh, thank like, God, Shazam and Joker.
Two of them are staying.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what I'd do if Joker left HBO Max. I think I'd have to, you know, revoke my membership to the HBO Max club. But why would you build your entire platform around this is going to be the home of our properties like this and then remove them? I understand because, like, you know, Disney Plus, it's the home of all the MCU movies. It's the home of all the Star Wars movies.
Yep.
I understand that, you know, sometimes like one or two of those films cycles out and it goes to like Netflix or it goes to Amazon Prime. I mean, I don't know if Disney Plus will eventually just have all of them at once, but I guess I don't understand why Warner Brothers doesn't do that, especially when they own all these properties. Like, they should do whatever they can to ensure that every single one of the DC films is on that streaming service. Because for a lot of people, that's why they signed up. Now, I'm right. obviously for myself, I kind of just am more interested in their entire catalog of content because to me, Warner Brothers is the king of content. Like, it's just like some of their classic film selection is probably the most impressive that I've seen on a streaming platform outside of the Criterion Collection, which, you know, I guess it's not really saying anything considering most streaming services don't have a lot of classic films on them, but my God, I mean, you can watch all of like these like classic film noir, like the Maltese Falcon, The Big Sleep, stuff like that. And so, like, yes, there is stuff still there. Like, there are great films still on there. There are great shows still on there. You can binge Friends until the cows come home. And yes, I myself have been watching Looney Tunes and I've really been enjoying that. I've been watching the new ones specifically, and I think they did a really great job of you know, recapturing the spirit of the original cartoon. So kudos to them for doing that. But when there is given how big comic books are and fandom is, and DC is in particular, you'd think that they would, you know, try a little harder to make sure that those movies are going to be there for I don't know, at least like half a year, right? At least 6 months. And then, okay, maybe we start taking ones out here and there and cycling through. It just, again, doesn't build goodwill with your customers. And it's disappointing to see that.
Yep. Yeah, that's, you have to be able to trust the service to stay connected to it.
Right.
Like you have to, I have to believe that these things I signed up for are going to be there. I have to, and when I don't know what's coming and I don't know when things are leaving, it just feels like, all right, why would I sign up for this one? Because I don't, like, I just have no idea what I'm going to have.
Yeah. And yeah.
I don't think that's a good way to do things.
No, I agree. And Dorito Chip Gamer in here is saying something interesting. He's like, it's fine if you remove them, but don't market them then. Market your other properties, right. Like Die Hard, Aliens, The Predator, Braveheart, Classics, Citizen Kane, Casablanca, Wizard of Oz. I really think what they should be doing is, I completely agree with him, and one of the things that I've said for the longest time is they should be marketing themselves as, look at our legacy content. You know Warner Brothers as being the studio that brought you this, The Wizard of Oz, one of the most beloved films of all time, and classic movie. Market yourself on that. And if you sell people on that, you'll get a lot of people coming in to watch those films just because of the Warner Brothers name alone.
Yeah. So hopefully they can figure out what they're doing. And, what I don't get about launching a competitive service like that at this point in time is that you have examples to follow. Yeah. There's not an excuse for like, oh, we didn't know this would look bad for us. Oh, we didn't know we needed exclusives. Oh, Netflix was thinking we need exclusives a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So by the time HBO jumps into it, they're like, oh, yeah, but we have the HBO stuff. Like, oh, that's not the same thing. That's not – like, you can't market yourself as a new thing and then rely on the fact that you have exclusives from the old thing. That becomes archive content at that point in time. And so I just think that they really – messed this thing up. And I think this is the example of why almost all of us are frustrated with the streaming model now, that everyone is trying to rip off Netflix and they're doing a bad job of it. Now Netflix has their own problems and their debt issues, and they don't own archives, and so then they're having to cut deals with people, and all those people wanting to make their own but none of them are doing as good of a job, I think, as Netflix of being ahead of the curve. And here we have HBO jumping into it very late and not being up to speed and just making some dumb mistakes right out of the gate. All right, moving on, I want to talk real quick on this one. No spoilers involved in this discussion, but there were some pretty significant Bond leaks that came out this week. You actually, I was hoping I would avoid them entirely, hopped on Twitter and someone just tweeted out, and I was like, oh, what is this person? Oh, no, I wish I hadn't read that. Mm-hmm. And then I did the classic Twitter mistake of I respond like, dude, spoilers. And that tweet started showing up in a bunch of my people's feed. And so I was like, oh, crap. Now I'm responsible for no. How many more of these are going to happen with all of the delays? Are we going to have a good number of these kind of leaks getting out there? And if you leak anything in the – don't post anything in the chat. If you do, I will block you.
Yeah, please. Don't do that for everyone else in the chat. It's unfortunate that this has happening. I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner, to be honest, just given the delay and everything. But what's really stupid about this whole thing is that it comes from the fact that a call sheet – A small selection of call sheets from when they were filming was put up for auction on eBay. Like, so it's not even like a script was leaked. It's not even like someone got their hands on the film. A call sheet. Like, it's nuts that this is sort of happening. But, I think a lot of the onus has to fall on the outlets that reported this, because this made its way into the mainstream media with the spoiler directly in the headline. Like, you saw, like, Screen Rant, I saw one of them put it directly in the headline. Not that I go to this website, but when you're scrolling for news, Fox News put it directly in the headline. And then, of course, you can't be surprised, but like all of the UK tabloids were eating this up. The Daily Mail, The Sun, I mean, the trash, tabloids that, you know, they know their bonds leaks and whatnot, but they're also just like have horrific journalistic integrity. And it's so like with all of these outlets putting out stuff like this, of course people were going to find out. Yeah. So at what point as a journalist do you decide not to cover it? And I'm happy to say that a lot of the more respectable outlets neglected to cover this. So thank you to those outlets that did their work and showed integrity. But because it's already out there, so many people have gotten spoiled. I mean, I got spoiled. I probably did the not so smart thing. Once I saw it was a thing, I seeked it out. That way I could get ahead of the curve before I started to see stuff. Yeah. And I wanted to read the full thing before I saw a snippet. Without getting too deep into the weeds here, without spoiling anything, a lot of this stuff that happens, I kind of predicted from like months ago, like just you know, having followed this project closely. So I can't say I was really surprised by a lot of the stuff in there. But there's, it's just the fact that this is happening is really tragic. I don't think it'll affect anyone's viewing experience of the film. It's just contextualizing things a little bit more. But still, it's just, come on, guys, don't spread this sort of information when the movie hasn't even come out yet.
And
you know,
won't for months and months and months
until Thanksgiving. That's like months away.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough for me to understand some of these major outlets that have so little concern about spoilers. And I mean, it comes into play anytime, like, you know, there's like a new Star Wars movie, new major MCU movie. There's certain major outlets infamous for just posting spoilers in their reviews, not random blogger guy, not random YouTuber guy that his buddy took him into the press screening. This is like top brands that everybody knows that brand name, and their movie critic guy has absolutely no respect whatsoever for average fan film fans or film fans in general, right, that do not have the privilege of seeing a movie before it comes out. And so then they just like right there in their review start, you know, with Endgame, they're just like, well, you know, right in the 10 minutes into the movie, the main villain is killed off, and therefore it kind of takes the threat. Like, they'll just say things like that, that you're like,
you
just said something that obviously you shouldn't have said. And like, especially with some of these ones, they the studio will actively send a message, please don't spoil anything in your reviews. And then major outlets have no concern. And it's infuriating that, like, I'm just a guy in Central Texas shooting on a webcam right now, and I have 1,000 times more respect for the audience than privileged guy writing for major outlet person that just doesn't care. It's like so disconnected from the average Joe that it's infuriating. And then, you know, just posting about leaks, who cares, you know? We'll get clicks. We gotta report the news.
Well, that's the thing. It's they're more concerned about traffic and clicks than they are about integrity. And that doesn't just go for print or outlets as well, or print online outlets. But there are a lot of like YouTubers who will do that stuff. I think, you know, given how out there in the media this stuff is, if someone was to cover it, I would understand. I don't think it's wrong, but like, you have a due diligence to not put the spoiler in the headline.
Yeah, yeah.
And give the people like a big spoiler warning at the beginning of the video, or even in your article if you're writing. Don't put it in the headline. That's where I've been getting irritated with this whole thing. It's one thing to cover the spoiler, but it's another to just flat out
put it in the headline.
And I understand that's part of the appeal and the intrigue is what it's actually about, but that, like, you can't just do that, because then you're completely screwing over an entire section of your readers who don't want to know this. Obviously, there's people who want to know spoilers and don't really care about this sort of thing, but there's way more people that care about not reading it than don't care about it, you know.
Right. And that's, I think the infuriating thing is that it's like people that don't care about spoilers whether because they see things earlier or they just don't care. It's not something that bothers them. And therefore, they impose their lack of caring on other people. Like, well, I don't care about spoilers, so what does it matter if I share things?
Yeah,
but you're robbing other people of something that they do value.
Right.
And if you don't care about that, that says a lot about you. Like, it doesn't when you're just overtly just doing some of this stuff, it's just being selfish. It's just being inconsiderate in imposing your values on others, which is not something that's generally speaking okay to do. All right. With that said, we're going to close out the audio version. We'll take some questions here on the live stream. Griffin, where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, so you guys can head on over to the FilmSpeak channel. I put up my review for Artemis Fowl yesterday. I should have a review out for Defy Bloods either later today or tomorrow. Really, really love that one, so you definitely want to check out my thoughts for that. And I've got interviews with Kenneth Branagh and Jason Isaacs up there. I will have one for Kenneth Branagh up there. So if you're interested in all that, head on over to the FilmSpeak channel. Check it out. You can also follow me on Twitter at Griff Schiller.
So that'll do it for the audio version of this. Wherever you are listening to this, be sure to leave a review and a rating. And as always, thank you so much for listening, and keep talking movies too much.